Instead of using their gifts for others, they were using their gifts to build themselves up. But love is free from that. Love never seeks its own. Love is always seeking somebody else's. This is the key to the whole concept of love. It is selflessness.
Thanks for starting your week off with Grace to You. Today, John MacArthur continues his look at true biblical love. You're going to find application to every one of your relationships. It's that practical. John calls this study from 1 Corinthians 13, the greatest of these. It's one of our 12 most popular series. We're airing one each month as part of our year-long 50th anniversary celebration. As John explained last week, true love is not just an emotion, a feeling you have. Instead, it's best described as actions. So far, we've seen three ways love behaves. It exercises patience, treats others with kindness, and does not give in to jealousy. To review those points and then discuss two more active characteristics of true love, here's John MacArthur with today's message.
The 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians is a portrait of love, and it comes out as a portrait of Jesus Christ because He is love. And I thought about the fact that here is a portrait of Christ, and the one thing that Jesus Christ wants is to have His church be a whole lot of reprints. He would like to reproduce His portrait in us. And so as we are looking at chapter 13, particularly verses 4 to 7, which discusses the qualities of love, and as we are seeing in it the portrait of Christ, He is looking back at us to see if that portrait is in fact reprinted and reproduced in us. Now, what He's doing here, the Apostle Paul, is pointing out to the Corinthians what love is. And as we saw last time, love is something you can't define philosophically. It is something you can't describe ideologically. It is something you can only describe as it functions. You don't define love, you describe it in action. And so all of these from verses 4 through 7 are verbs describing how love acts rather than adjectives describing love in terms of a definition. And here Paul is giving us what has to be biblically the greatest, most far-reaching and broad description of love that has ever been penned by the Holy Spirit's inspiration. It's tremendously and intensely practical. And even though it's a portrait of Jesus Christ, which gives it an exalted characteristic, it is at the same time a shoe leather presentation of what Christ wants to reproduce in us in the matter of daily living. And as we saw in the second section of the chapter, which we call the perfections of love from verses 4 to 7, we said there were 15 qualities of love in action, and we've begun to look at them. Paul discussed in the first three verses the prominence of love, and now he discusses the perfections of love, and he lists these 15 qualities of love. They're very practical, they're very simple, they're very straightforward, they're very necessary for the believer. Now, we considered the first three of them last time. Do you remember? Verse 4, love suffers long. And we told you that literally it means love is patient with people. It doesn't have a spirit of retaliation. It is absolutely and totally forgiving. Secondly, we remembered that love is kind, and the literal word there is useful. Love is useful. In other words, love uses itself to help others. That's kindness. Thirdly, we learned that love does not envy. Love envies not. Envy, we said, is two things. Superficially, it is wishing to have what someone else has, and deeper, it is wishing that someone else didn't have it. It comes literally from a word that means to boil, and it is the inner boiling that comes when you want what others have to the point where you wish they didn't have it. And now we come fourthly to love is not boastful. It says love vaunteth not itself. Love is not boastful is perhaps an easier way to understand that. You'll notice it's followed by another statement, is not puffed up. Now, those may seem like synonyms or parallels, but they aren't. There's a difference. The first statement represents the verbalizing of pride, the actual speech of pride, the actual action of pride. The second, the attitude of pride, conceit that is down inside. The word that says to us, love is not boastful, literally comes from a word that points to a root meaning windbag. And the word is this. This is just the verbalizing, the windbag, the hot air that comes out of the mouth of a proud, conceited person. Now, you know how it works. Somebody is telling a marvelous story about some accomplishment, and you're listening and dying till they get done. So you can say, oh, well, if you think that's something, let me tell you about what I did. And off you go. And a third party chimes in, and by then you're very uninterested in the whole thing. But the idea of bragging is to make somebody else feel like you are superior to them. And believe me, that is the opposite of love, because love says, I want you to feel superior. I'll take the role of a servant. Love never brags. Love never blows its own horn. And let's face it, nobody really likes people like that, because they are loveless people. You know, when you get somebody around you like that, you don't want to fellowship with them. You want to leave. Or wish they did. You know, the Corinthian problem at this point was that they were a bunch of spiritual show-offs. That's really true. They were totally inconsiderate of each other. They were constantly vying for public attention. Everybody vying for the rulership. There were no, as far as we know, there's not one single mention in the entire Corinthian letter of an elder. They didn't even have any leaders. As far as we know, nobody had responsibility. Paul finally says, will you tell the prophets to do something about it? We don't even know what kind of organization the thing had, but it was absolute chaos. Let me show you 14:26 of 1 Corinthians. How is it then? He says, when you guys meet together, how is it when you come together, everybody has a psalm, everybody has a doctrine, everybody has a tongue, everybody has a revelation, everybody has an interpretation. What kind of chaos is that? If this morning everybody who had the gift of teaching, all of a sudden, all of you started teaching. Just stood up, I have a few points that I would like to make. Well, I have a point that I would like to make. And then a few decided to sing a solo. We had four or five solos. Somebody started in ecstatic gibberish. A few folks were shouting interpretations across toward the people speaking gibberish. And that would be typical of a Corinthian assembly. And an unbeliever would come in and think they were really nuts. And he would be right. There's no place for boasting. I remember when I was in my first year of seminary and I was trying to orient my life, and I got a hold of a book by Trumbull on some principles of evangelism. And he said, and I never forgot this, I only read it once and it stuck with me all through these years. But he said in that book, he said, I made a vow to God that changed my life. And so I wanted to know what it was. So I read on and he said, this was the vow. He said, God, if you'll give me the strength, every time I have the opportunity to introduce the topic of conversation, it will always be of Jesus Christ. God, if you'll give me the strength, every time I have the opportunity to introduce the topic of conversation, it will always be of Jesus Christ. Listen, when you and I open our mouths, it ought to be whom? Jesus Christ, not us. You learn to do that, and it'll get you away from always talking about yourself. Proverbs tells us, and I don't want to even get into discussion of these in depth, but Proverbs tells us so much about pride and bragging and all that. Let me read you some of the things it says. You don't need to try to follow, but Proverbs 8:13 says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogance, because that's what the Lord hates. Proverbs 11:2, when pride comes, then comes shame. Chapter 13, verse 10. Only by pride comes contention. Boy, that's so true. All that pride ever does is breed contention. All it does is ever start fights. That's all it ever does. Humility has never started a fight yet. Humble people haven't got anything to argue about. They give. Proud people fight. Start contentions. Proverbs 16:18, Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. And that's just pointing out that proud people are always the most ignorant of all because in their pride and smugness, they don't understand what awaits them. And in 29:23 of Proverbs, a man's pride shall bring him low. A man's pride shall bring him low. You know, love is not big-headed. Love is big-hearted. See? John the Baptist comes along. He's been the hero. He's been the great prophet. He's been out in the wilderness and the multitudes have been coming to him day after day. Masses of people. And he stands up one day and he looks at Jesus Christ and he says, he must increase and what? I must decrease. The sooner you forget about John the Baptist, the better I'm going to like it. Now, what do you see in all this? You see this, that love is the only hope for the Corinthians, and it's our only hope. A love that is superior to eloquence, to spiritual insight, to knowledge, to faith, to charity, to martyrdom. Love which suffers long and is kind. Love that is the only power in the world that can save us from the stupid swagger of boastfulness and indulging in the sneers of envy. Love never begrudges, says Paul, and love never shows off. And sixthly, let's go to another one. Love doesn't behave rudely. Love doesn't behave rudely. This is such a practical thing. The verb here means to behave in an unbecoming manner. Poor manners, rudeness. You say, well, that seems like a simple little deal. You mean that's all tied up with agape, the great concept of divine love? Yes. Listen, poor manners and rudeness is saying this. I don't love you because I could care less what affects you. I will do what I want, whether you like it or not. When I was a little kid, my mommy said to me, all the time she'd say to me, don't slurp your soup. And I used to think, well, who cares if I slurp my soup? And then one time I ate with somebody who slurped his soup. I didn't particularly enjoy mine as he was slurping his. And I realized that not slurping my soup had nothing to do with keeping my clothes clean. It had something to do with how much other folks could enjoy their time at the table. Love is never rude because love is always lost in how what it does affects somebody else. Our dear Lord was so tremendous in personifying this. I just want to remind you of one incident in his life. Look at Luke 7. It's a beautiful one, and it's a situation where the Lord protected a lady from rudeness. Luke 7:36. One of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. A Pharisee named Simon asked Jesus to dinner at his house, and he had some other people there, and so Jesus went. He went to the Pharisee's house, and he sat down to eat. Behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner, undoubtedly a prostitute, when she knew Jesus was eating in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, which would be extremely expensive. She came in the house where he's eating. It must have been an interesting situation. And stood at his feet, behind, weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hair of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. I'll tell you, that's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Here's a prostitute, weeping and wiping Jesus' feet and putting ointment on them. Now, when the Pharisee who had bidden him saw it, he spoke within himself. He has a little conversation in his mind, a little soliloquy here. This man, if he were a prophet, he hasn't made his evaluation of Christ yet, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that touches him. She's a sinner. Now, if this guy was for real, this wouldn't be happening. And Jesus answering said to him, isn't that interesting? He never even opened his mouth. And Jesus answered his thought, Simon, I have somewhat to say to you. And he said, Master, say on, hypocrite. And he made up his mind whether he was master yet. He said, now there was a certain creditor who had two debtors. The one owed 500 denarii, the other 50. And when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him most? Simon answered and said, I suppose that he to whom he forgave most. And he said unto him, thou hast rightly judged. And he turned to the woman and said to Simon, pointing to the woman, he says to Simon, you see that woman? I entered into your house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. And boy, there's a sarcastic thing in that statement. And he said to her, thy sins are forgiven. And they that were eating with him began to say within themselves, who is this that forgiveth sins also? And he said to the woman, thy faith has saved thee. Go in peace. See, what's the story teaching? It's just showing us a very simple thing. Here was a woman who entered a Pharisee's home. The first response of that Pharisee would have been rude, would have been arrogance, would have been scorn to that woman. What are you doing in here, you filthy, vile, sinning woman? Out! And Jesus shielded the woman from the scorn and the arrogance and the rudeness and the indifference of the Pharisee. And Jesus loved the woman, and Jesus forgave the woman, and Jesus redeemed the woman. And Barclay is right when he translates the phrase this way. Love does not behave gracelessly. Love is gracious. Love is never rude. And it isn't just a matter of whether you're rude to a believer, but love is never even rude to an unbeliever. I've seen some Christians who don't smoke who were so rude to a non-Christian who did that they would never have had an opportunity to communicate something about Christ. You know, we can get to the place where we've got all the doctrine and all the answers, and we become these theological hardheads, and we lose our grace and we lose our charm with people who aren't where we are. And that isn't right. We can close off the whole world except our little four and our little deal, shut the door, us four, no more. And there's no grace. And there's no kindness. There's just a rudeness. You know, one of the things I believe that Christianity very often has to pay the price for is just plain rudeness to unbelieving people. We just are often very rude and thoughtless to people. Well, love can save us from the bitter sneer of envy and the ridiculous swagger of boastfulness. Love can save us from the inner tendency to be so inflated with our own importance that we're rude to everybody else, and the tendency to behave without grace as contemptuous of others and others' feelings. Seventh, I'll give you this one. Love seeks not its own. This is probably the key to everything. Love seeks not its own. It's the opposite of self-seeking. Love isn't interested in its own things. Love is interested in the things of someone else. Lenski, the great commentator, said this. He said, cure selfishness and you've just replanted the Garden of Eden. He's right. I would say that in the portrait of love, love seeks not its own are the eyes. They're unselfish eyes. The windows of the soul show the soul to be selfless. And the Corinthians were selfish. Oh, they were selfish. They were selfish in their spiritual gifts. In fact, if you look at chapter 14, verse 4, and he talks to them about their use of the gifts of tongues, he says, he that speaks in a tongue edifies himself. And in verse 12, he says, seek that you may excel to the edifying of the church, not yourself, even in the area of spiritual gifts, something that was good, they had twisted around to make it a selfish thing. Instead of using their gifts for others, they were using their gifts to build themselves up. But love is free from that. Love never dwells on itself. Love never seeks its own. Love is always seeking somebody else's. This is the key to the whole concept of love. It is selflessness. You're patient with people. You're kind with people. You're not jealous of people. You're not angry with people. You're not upset with people. You're not provoked by people. You're very tolerant with people. You're very generous with people. You're very gracious with people. You're never rude to people. All of that means you're selfless. Let me give you the last one for this time. Number 8, and that's something I just mentioned. Love is not provoked. Love is not provoked. From the Greek word, we get our English word paroxysm, which means a sudden outburst. Love never gets upset. You ever get upset? Love never gets irritated. Love never is ready to fight. Next time you get upset at home and you get mad, remember this. The reason you're angry is because you don't love the person you're angry at. Because when you got angry, you said what you shouldn't have said and you wounded them. And the reason you wounded them is because you wanted to wound them. And you know what? You decided, I want my way, and I want it the way I want it, and if you don't do it the way I want it, I'm going to hurt you. You see, you say things that will never be forgotten. They leave scars. You do things that hurt and injure. Love bears all injuries. Love receives all injuries. Love suffers everything without irritation and without exasperation, unless it's defending God. But when it comes to self, it takes it. What happens when a husband lashes out and lets his wife have it? Really punches her. It happens. Does he love her? No. No, he doesn't love her. He is more concerned about his thing and himself than anything. And if she crosses it, boom. That's anger. Anger is the opposite of love because anger says, I matter so much. If you do something that I don't like, I'm going to let you have it. It's not easy to handle this, but I'll tell you, unless a Christian learns to handle it, you'll never really experience love. You can tell your husband you love him all the time, but if all you ever do is get angry at him, it's going to be hard for him to be convinced of it. Very hard. You can tell your children you love your children, but if all you ever do is yell at them, get irritated at them, get upset at them, they're going to wonder how come they can't ever do anything that makes you happy. And how come once in a while you're not just happy that they're happy and you're unhappy for a change. Love is the only cure for irritability. For irritability in the last analysis is simply self-centeredness. Jonathan Edwards, I'll close with this, third president of Princeton University, one of the greatest preachers of history, had a daughter with an uncontrollable temper. A young man fell in love with his daughter and he came, and of course, the young man wouldn't have known that probably because, you know, when you're courting, it's all hearts and flowers. But the young man fell in love and asked to marry her. So he came and he says, Dr. Edwards, I want to marry your daughter. You can't have her, was the abrupt answer of Jonathan Edwards. But I love her, the young man said. You still can't have her. Edwards repeated. But she loves me, replied the young man. You still can't have her. Why, he said, because she's not worthy of you. But, he said, she's a Christian, isn't she? Yes, said Edwards. But the grace of God can live with some people with whom no one else could ever live. Like the lady who said, I lose my temper, but it's all over in a minute. And so is the atom bomb. We could talk a lot about what temper does to destroy you. But the point that Paul's making here isn't that. It's just simply this. It isn't loving. Ask yourself, you're a Christian? The love of God is shed abroad in your heart? Jesus is love personified? Paul is a model of love? Are you following those models, or are you a Christian like the Corinthians and seeing yourself as the opposite of all of these qualities?
That's Grace to You with John MacArthur. Thanks for tuning in today. John is president of the Masters University and Seminary, and he's titled his current series, The Greatest of These. Now, this study is based on one small part of 1 Corinthians 13. It's one of the shortest chapters in that book, and it's often referred to as the love chapter. But John, what about the rest of the book? Is there a theme or a crucial piece of background people should know about 1 Corinthians to sort of set the context for this?
Yeah, the first letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthian church was just one long corrective of their misbehavior. He was concerned about the fact that they were breaking into factions and fighting each other and identifying themselves as followers of this guy and that guy and even followers of Jesus and arguing about, you know, which group was most important and most prominent.
Even making lawsuits against
each other. They were suing each other. They, I think, were accusing each other of insignificance so that some of them were haughty and some of them were, you know, elevating themselves above others. There was confusion about spiritual gifts in the church. That's what led to a lot of the spiritual pride in the church. So 1 Corinthians is, and that's an interesting juxtapositioning because 1 Corinthians is a book just full of correction. In fact, there's not really a lot of doctrine, with the exception of the 15th chapter, which is the doctrine of the resurrection spelled out in detail.
Right.
The rest of it is just correctives and warnings and discipline and all of that.
It reads like Paul is writing to a 21st century church.
It really does. And those are issues that all of us who preach go back to when we preach to our congregations. But right in the middle of that, and this is the strange juxtaposition, is a chapter on love.
Hmm.
So here is Paul literally taking apart this church, confronting all of their sins and iniquities and transgressions, and in the middle saying, love is the greatest thing,
right,
which then reinforces the reality that you're never more loving than when you confront sin. You're never more loving than when you confront sin. If you don't understand the big picture of a book, you miss a whole lot. So let me encourage you listeners today, start ordering commentaries on the New Testament so that as you study a passage, you study it in its context. A commentary is designed to explain the whole book. You could even start with ordering the commentary on 1 Corinthians. You would be literally revolutionized in how you think biblically to go through a book by reading a commentary. We have the whole New Testament. You could start with one volume, or you can order all 33. They're reasonably priced and available always from Grace to You.
Right. And this commentary not only takes an in-depth look at 1 Corinthians 13, it also helps you understand what Paul says about speaking in tongues, Christian liberty, spiritual gifts, and the resurrection. So order the 1 Corinthians commentary, part of the MacArthur New Testament commentary series, when you contact us today. To place your order, call toll-free 800-55-GRACE or log on to gty.org. The 1 Corinthians commentary costs $19. That's the same price for any volume in the MacArthur New Testament commentary series. And if you'd like to purchase all 33, you'll get a discount on each volume. Again, to order the 1 Corinthians commentary, or a different volume, or the entire MacArthur commentary series, call 800-55-GRACE or go to gty.org. That website, one more time, gty.org. And if you'd like to keep up to date on free offers, new resources, or the ministry's future plans, make sure to follow us on social media. On Instagram and Twitter, use the handle @GraceToYou. And follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/GraceToYou. Now for John MacArthur and the entire Grace to You staff, I'm Phil Johnson. Thanks for being here today. And make sure you catch our next broadcast. John's going to help you excel at loving others. See how to care for those around you tomorrow when John continues his study, The Greatest of These. It's another 30 minutes of unleashing God's truth one verse at a time. We've been doing that since 1969 here on Grace to You.